From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Jeannie Yandel in for Ross Reynolds. The International Monetary Fund just released its most recent report on the state of the U.S. economy. So, what's the verdict? Felix Salmon is a financial reporter for Reuters. He's here to talk with me about that and other economic news. Felix, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. So, first off, it's been 4 years since the peak of the recession here in the United States. Where is U.S. economic recovery at?
I would say a bit miserable, really. We still have very high unemployment at 7.6%. We have very low proportion of the people who should be working actually working. The employment rate is very low. Economic growth, which was the one sort of tiny hope that we would, that the economic growth would turn into job growth, that seems to be slowing down. And according to the IMF, it's going to be less than 2% this year. So we're not going back into another recession, which means we're better than my home country, if the United Kingdom or say Greece, you know. So there are countries which are doing worse, but we're not doing that well.
Well, overall, the IMF's report was a lot more optimistic than it was last year. Why do you think that is?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I mean, the one thing the IMF did make a point of saying is that we could have been doing a lot better if it wasn't for, do you remember the sequester?
Yes.
Remember when we suddenly cut billions of dollars of government spending for no good reason? That has basically halved the economic growth rate that we should and could be having just because of political dysfunction in Washington.
Well, one of the things that the Fed just announced recently is that it's planning to roll back the stimulus plan that it had going. How is that going to affect our economic growth?
So the best kind of stimulus is fiscal stimulus, and so in that sense, what the Congress did in terms of spending less money is anti-stimulus. It's slowing us down, and so what that means in turn is that the Federal Reserve has to try and pump money into the economy some other way, and it doesn't really know how to do that. So it came up with this thing called quantitative easing, which it's doing at the rate of $85 billion a month, which is causing all manner of volatility in the stock market. But it doesn't seem to be translating into job growth or even inflation right now. So it's not clear that that's working. It's going to keep on doing that for the time being. If unemployment gets down to 7%, it might slow down the pace at which it does it, but we're still going to have that for the time being just because, you know, the government, Congress, isn't doing what it should be doing.
I'm talking with Felix Salmon. He's a financial reporter for Reuters, and we're talking about all things economics. We started by talking about the U.S. economy, and I want to get into what's happening internationally. You mentioned this a little bit, that the U.S. is, in fact, doing better than your home country of the United Kingdom. It's doing better than Greece. The G8 summit happened this week in Ireland. Does the G8 summit have any effect on the global economy?
Zero. It did once in 2009. They actually got their act together and coordinated some activities and tried to prevent the entire world from just falling off a cliff. But basically, since 2009, it's been a high-level political talking shop. I'm sure you saw the photographs of Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama looking very upset and miserable. But they weren't upset and miserable for economic reasons. They were upset and miserable for sort of geopolitical reasons. That's what the G8 has become these days.
Well, there are also plenty of photo opportunities of them standing out in the beautiful Irish countryside with no ties on, which seems very nice.
And passing villages where the Irish economy is so bad that all of the shops were empty. And so they put these photo murals in the windows of the shops so that when the prime ministers and presidents drove past, they would look like there was some activity going on in those shops, even though there wasn't.
Well, what do you think is going to happen with economies within Europe over the next year or so? I mean, you just pointed out that the Irish economy is so bad that they had to fake economic activity.
And the Greek economy is looking particularly bad right now. The IMF is having a fight with Greece, which isn't doing what it had promised to do. The Italian economy isn't looking so hot. Spain, Portugal. Basically, if you're not Germany, you're not doing very well right now. So although the United States is weak, I would say that Europe is undoubtedly worse.
What effect do you think the Eurozone has on weaker countries economically, like Greece, like Spain?
Being part of the Euro? Well, what it means is that they all have overvalued currencies now. That in order to be competitive, they need to be able to export their goods at a cheaper rate, or, you know, attract tourists from abroad, or do whatever they need to get money coming into the country. And they can't do that when they have this German strength currency known as the euro. So it's bad for them in terms of growth. It's good for them in terms of having relatively low interest rates or stability, or, you know, keeping the euro together and Europe together in a geopolitical sense. But it's hard to see how any of those what's known as peripheral countries, the ones on the Mediterranean, are going to be able to get any kind of growth so long as they remain in the euro.
So should those weaker countries like Greece and Spain, should they contemplate leaving?
Well, it's being contemplated. Greece has certainly thought about it. The costs would be enormous, and they would have to default on their debts, and there would be all manner of really nasty spillover effects to the entire Eurozone and quite possibly the global economy. There was really no legal way for them to do that. The way that the European Union was structured, you could go in, but you can't ever go out. So the EU as a whole is trying very, very hard to make sure that never happens. But in terms of competitiveness, it does make a certain amount of sense.
I'm talking with Felix Salmon. He's a financial reporter with Reuters, and we're talking about the global economy, the United States economy. And now, Felix, I want to talk to you a little bit about rich people who try and give their money away to charitable causes. You've written that multimillionaire philanthropists are doing it wrong, essentially. What do you think they're doing wrong?
One of the things they do, well, they're doing many, many things wrong, but one of the main things they do wrong is they do it basically in order to feel good about themselves and to give to causes which their peers have sort of pressured them to give to, even if the gift isn't particularly effective. So John Paulson is this billionaire hedge fund manager who just gave $100 million to pretty up his back garden, basically. He lives on Central Park, and Central Park is the richest park in the world, and it doesn't need $100 million, but that's where he's giving his $100 million. They also do things like fund architecture, which is very expensive. They love putting their names on buildings. They love putting their names on just about anything, really. It becomes this sort of ego play, whereas if you really want to make a difference, we want a lot more humility. You want to stop thinking that just because you're rich doesn't mean you know better than anyone else how to give your money away and how it should be most effective. And you want to listen to people a lot more and sort of ask yourself, where can this money do the most good, rather than where can this money make me, you know, give me the most acclaim?
Well, I have to ask, we have the biggest philanthropic organization in the world here in Seattle with the Gates Foundation. Are they getting things wrong on this level?
Well, I don't know if you've seen their headquarters, but it's pretty lavish. I'm not quite sure what the purpose of that is. They're paying their senior employees, you know, seven-figure salaries. Again, they claim it's because that's what you need to offer in order to get the best people. But I don't buy it, because the best people all seem to be old friends of Bill Gates from Microsoft, by curious coincidence. That said, it is definitely one of the best philanthropies in the world. They are good at throwing large amounts of money at big problems, identifying a finite number of problems they want to solve, and then being very aggressive about going after them. They are so huge that it's impossible to talk to people in the philanthropic world without hearing a bunch of grumbling about the Gates Foundation. But compared to a lot of the individual philanthropy that I see in the rest of the world, I would definitely put them in the very top tier.
Well, Felix Salmon, you report on economics and finances for Reuters, so you're eminently qualified to answer this next question. What advice would you give your younger self? We're going to be talking about that later this hour.
What advice would I give my younger self? You know what? The advice which I gave myself back when I was young, the don't let school interfere with your education, turned out to be quite good. It's very easy when you're in high school or in college to think that the stuff that's happening in your classes is particularly important and you need to be paying a lot of attention to it. But, you know, once you get older, you realize that very little of that actually matters.
Felix, that's great advice. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for talking with us as well. I actually feel like I have a better sense of what's happening around the world economically.
It's been fun.
Felix Salmon is a financial reporter for Reuters, and you can find a link to his work and learn more about him at our website. That's KUOW.org. This is The Conversation. I'm Jeannie Yandel in for Ross Reynolds.